From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Every 67 seconds, someone in the United States develops Alzheimer's. One man believes in tackling the disease head-on. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is Dr. Thomas Obisasan. He's a physician, international researcher, scholar, and he is in the Department of Medicine here at Howard University, professor of geriatrics. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick.
So, Dr. Obisasan, you were educated in Nigeria, the University of Lagos, where you received your medical degree. Tell me about that experience.
Growing up in Nigeria in those days was a little bit of a challenge. One incredible experience that really got me interested in academic medicine was watching my professors on the ward runs. I was fascinated by the clout and the prestige that was offered by the status of a professor. And at that point in time, I indicated to myself that this is a path I wanted to take. In fact, in my yearbook, I wrote in my yearbook that one of my major goals in life was to contribute to the development of science. One of my colleagues actually reminded me of this writing a couple of years back when we had our reunion. That's probably what really got me fascinated and interested in academic medicine.
And as you talk about contributing to science, you did a residency in family medicine and then a fellowship in geriatrics. Why geriatrics?
I was actually a second-year resident when this idea started gelling on my mind. I had the pleasure, privilege of taking care of a couple of senior patients during my residency. And on a particular day, one lady, older lady, asked me, who is your program director? And I immediately said to myself, I've done something terribly wrong today. I'm in deep trouble. Well, because she asked me, and I had no option but to respond. So I gave her the name of my program director. And the following day, my program director called me to the office and said, well, Tom, I've been hearing very nice things about you, especially from your older patients. So my heart rate went down a little bit. A couple of months later, another older lady asked me, where is your mother? And it so happened that my mother had just died about 2 days to that question. I hesitated a little bit and I told her my mother had passed away. Well, these two events sort of culminated in my mind that we can only be great in what we do if we truly love what we do. At that point in time, I came to the realization that perhaps I was able to connect with my older patients in ways that was not very immediately possible with the younger patient. So at that point in time, I began to think about the idea of a geriatric fellowship.
So when we look at Alzheimer's in particular, which is an area of study that you have been focused on, we look at the incidence, the difficulty that families have coping with it. Please give us an overview of what that looks like in the African-American population.
Alzheimer's disease is a scourge that has been ravaging our community for decades now. It's very challenging in the sense that it's like someone alive and yet not with you. A couple of years ago, there was a survey whereby people were asked, what's the disease that is most dreaded? And Alzheimer's disease happened to have topped that list. There are very significant socioeconomic and physical stress and overwhelming challenges that comes with caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Often, even family members who are caring for a person with Alzheimer's disease often become depressed and begin to decline their own personal health. The resources that are necessary to optimally care for these individuals are often very challenging. And many times, family members are not really prepared with the social and physical demands that comes with caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease. So it's a significant economic, physical, and psychological challenge to our community. Unfortunately, I must say, we happen to have the highest rate of Alzheimer's disease of all races. Yeah.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Thomas Obisasan, Professor of Geriatrics at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Dr. Obisasan, as we look at the breadth of your research and your activity in geriatrics, and you talk about dementia, Alzheimer's, what are some of the most common underlying causes in this? And again, relating it to the African-American experience, it also seems to be a taboo. This is not something that we often hear spoken about in our communities.
For one, we yet do not know exactly what caused Alzheimer's disease to begin. However, over the past 2 decades or so, we have begun to realize that cardiovascular disease risk may in fact contribute to the development of Alzheimer's disease. What do I mean by that? I'm talking about high levels of lipids, hypertension, overweight and obesity, diabetes, and so on and so forth. In addition to that, we also know that psychosocial issues and psychological stress may also compound this problem. What makes this dynamic quite interesting to our own situation is the fact that we know for a fact that there are things we can do to actually mitigate against many of these risk factors. We know there are proven interventions that may ameliorate complications of hypertension, diabetes, overweight and obesity, and so on and so forth. And the question that we are asking now, that many people in the academic community or scientific community are asking, if those interventions that have been proven to mitigate against cardiovascular disease risk have been beneficial to reducing the rate of hypertension and so on and so forth, can the same intervention be beneficial to reducing Alzheimer's disease risk if we come to the understanding that, yes, indeed, cardiovascular disease risk may contribute to Alzheimer's disease risk?
Now, the prevention of and mitigating the risk factors you've clearly articulated, what types of interventions in terms of treatment are currently considered state of the art?
For one, we yet do not, or sadly so, we yet do not have a very efficacious treatment for Alzheimer's disease, which is why many people across the U.S. and across the world are working very furiously to find some efficacious treatment. But from prevention standpoint, I think we've come to the realization that, yes, indeed, aerobic exercise may in fact reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, either directly by reducing all those cardiovascular disease risk factors, or perhaps through yet undetermined mechanisms. One of the things we're doing at Howard University is to actually examine the relationship of fitness adaptation to Alzheimer's disease risk. And if that actually works, we are particularly interested in through what mechanism does cardiovascular disease risk reduction and physiologic adaptation and aerobic exercise actually influence Alzheimer's disease risk. We are looking at genetic underpinnings, we are looking at gene expression profile, and we are looking at post-expression modification. Of course, we are now much more aware that the genes that are known today that we've discovered over the past several decades or so are for the most part non-deterministic. That is, they interact with the environment to actually manifest their effect. For decades, we've tossed around the idea of gene and environment interaction. But quite recently, we at Howard University have been able to demonstrate that this is not a hyperbole. This is something that is actually real. There are really significant effects that are going on at the genetic level when someone engages in aerobic exercise.
Now, you're currently the director of the Clinical Research Unit of the George and Howard University Center for Clinical Translational Science, and you're also the Associate Vice President for Regulatory Research Compliance and the designated institutional official here for the agencies we interact with as we perform research. With that in mind, there are few African-Americans participating in clinical trials. And just as you articulated, what is occurring in African-Americans with respect to dementia and Alzheimer's does warrant more studying. What do you think we should do to be able to recruit more African-Americans to participate in clinical trials? And do you think that this is still an important issue?
Of course, we are acutely aware of the backdrop of the historical perspective on why our people may not be willing to participate in clinical research. Being a designated institutional official as well as the Associate Vice President for Regulatory Research Compliance, I'm very aware, more acutely aware now of the regulatory oversight that makes it almost impossible for some of the mistakes of the past to occur. The number one challenge we have is actually communicating that to our community. Over the past several months, we've made some significant inroads into connecting with the community. We are engaged in dialogue with pastors in the D.C. metropolitan area. We have also had conversations with the Grand Mason, who are actually very interested in assisting us in engaging and reaching out to the community and connecting with the community. So we are making significant inroads. Nonetheless, the challenges are not minor. I think it's important because if we don't do it, I'm not quite sure we can expect anyone else to do it for us.
When you look at the aging population today and you look at young medical students coming in to the profession, what advice would you give them as to why geriatrics is an appropriate specialty to pursue?
It's a bit of a challenge, really, getting students as well as residents interested in aging because of the dynamics that you may very well be aware of. However, somebody once said to me that the current baby boomers can be described as a sea of elephants marching through a cornfield. Each place they go, they leave their mark. When they were babies, diapers and things to do with children were kind of selling like a hotcake. When they became a college age, colleges across the country had an unprecedented enrollment number. When they got into the real estate market was the best it's ever been. Now they are becoming of age. We can expect the challenges of caring for the aging population to become even far more significant than it currently is. We currently do not have enough adequately trained personnel to care for our seniors, and therefore it becomes imperative that we must engage students and residents at a very early stage to get them interested and help them to see why aging can be very, very important and why they need to be interested in aging. You will care for an elderly person. It's just no way around it. And what that means is that we all have to become attuned to the needs of the senior population and be prepared to face the challenges ahead because they are not minor.
Well said. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Thomas Obisasan, He is a Howard University professor of geriatrics. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.